good to be here in humid Ontario, looking at all the busted trees. Everywhere you go, it's different. Edmonton's cold and dry. Here, it's cold and humid, and it penetrates more. I would like to take a look at 30 years with you in a nutshell. And I've called this God's Sovereign Design. And this is a picture I took at Bonnechere Bible Camp at Round Lake in July. Looking up between two pine trees, walking down to the water. Who knows the camp? Well, no, there's a trail down to where you get in the canoes. And you look up, you see these trees. Well, it's a gnarly mess. You can't see where one thing begins and another thing ends. And sometimes when we look at our lives, they seem to be like that. Except in retrospect, when you look back, you see how God is leading. And that's why I chose this passage, if we can change to the next frame, in Isaiah 43. And I highlighted the words that I think are most important in these verses, in the first verse. You can see them, the word created, formed, redeemed, and called. I would call this a love passage, and if you look at the whole chapter, you would see how God's heart has compassion and is beating for his people. And many times we associate the Old Testament with a God who seems to be always wrathful and wanting to pull ears and so forth, and New Testament, the love Testament, and it isn't so. God doesn't change. God is a God of love, even in the Old Testament. And Isaiah 43 really shines through. And so just looking at this once again with you, but now this is what the Lord says. He who created you, O Jacob, he has formed you, O Israel. Fear not, for I have redeemed you, have summoned you by your name. Then verse 2, when you pass through the waters, I'll be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned, and the flames will not set you ablaze. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. And I will give you Egypt for your ransom, Cush and Seba for your stead, since you are precious and honored in my sight, and because I love you. And I will give you men in exchange for you, and people in exchange for your life. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bring your children from the east, and I gather them from the west, and I will say to the north, give them up, and to the south, do not hold them back. Bring my sons from afar, my daughters from the ends of the earth, and everyone who is called by my name, whom I have created for my glory, whom I formed and made. And the chapter goes on from there. The New Testament, the next frame, in Ephesians 2:10, it sums it up saying we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us. And I want to take you on a journey today, a journey through our years of life, Gerald and myself. And when I look at the words created and formed, I look at our lives as they were years ago. Here's my wife when she was a little girl, and I think that was somewhere in South Dakota at the time. Her parents were going through the Sioux Falls Seminary at the time, and they were pastoring in a little town called Chancellor. And even at that age, my wife was singing, and God had a design on her life. And the next picture over is myself looking frozen. Well, I grew up in Winnipeg. Explains it all. I knew I was created and formed because I heard of it in church and Sunday school. And we had missionaries that would come through and stay in our home. My parents were very hospitable, and they would take in missionaries for conferences, and I would hear their stories, most of them from Africa. Next frame, please. And then come to the point to realize that we've been redeemed for a purpose and called by his name, for his workmanship, for us to be able to do something, what he has prepared in advance for us. That blows me away, if you want to use that expression. I can't understand that. Before I was even born, God had a purpose of my life. He knew the steps I would take. And this is our first missionary prayer card with our picture on it. I still look the same, don't I? That was in May of 1983. And then God called us to Brazil. We spent 6 months ahead of time doing preparation work, orientation courses, going from church to church to raise support. And I remember, when I look at this verse, where it says you will walk through the, you'll pass through the rivers and they will not sweep over you. I remember an event that happened not too far away from here in September of 1983. A pastor in Detroit took us on his houseboat south to Canada. It's the only place we can go south to get to Canada, to Windsor. And he had the church organist and her husband and their dog and his wife and himself and us two on the boat. We went across to Windsor, had supper at the docks there at Lake Sinclair. Good time. Went back to Detroit at sunset. And then everything started to go wrong. All the equipment conked out. There was no more dials working on the boat. The lights weren't working. The motor wasn't working. We were adrift and it was dark and a storm came up. And they say the storm on Lake St. Clair can be horrible. It is. And I was sitting in the back of the houseboat and the septic tank fell over on top of me. Then I moved to the front beside the pastor who was trying to guide the boat without any power through the storm. And I was on a bar stool at his side. And the dog was right beside me. And the dog was whining and howling. And if I have the tongues of, if I have the gift of interpretation of tongues, it was at that moment I understood the dog. And he says, we're all going to die. We pulled into a wharf somewhere in Detroit at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I look at this and I thought, you know, Satan was trying to take us out. And he says, when you pass through the waters, I'll be with you. When you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. And I thought, okay, Lord, I hope that's all that's going to happen to us. But then it says, when you walk through the fire, you'll not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze. Well, many times we walk through different kinds of fires. One was a crossfire, a shootout. We were already in our second term of service. And we had just started the church, small congregation, very close-knit, as it happens when you start new churches. And our services in Brazil are in the evening, from 7 o'clock to 9 p.m. And afterwards, we would go to one particular family's house after that for supper. And they would prepare a barbecue. It would be eaten between 11:30 and midnight, every Sunday night. Heavy food. I was young. And then afterwards, we'd pack up the two children we had at the time. The third had not been born yet. Put them into our VW van on the seats and drive home to our apartment. And I had to go along a very windy road, and I knew it quite well, and I was tired late at night. Knew that Monday morning, another week would start. And I would be running along at a high speed, like 60 kilometers an hour in a 40 zone, but I knew it well. And I went around one corner and I heard fireworks. And I thought, you know, who is playing soccer at this time of night? Because in Brazil, when your team is playing soccer and your team scores a goal, you run outside and set off fireworks every time. And I heard bang, bang, bang. I thought, okay, who's playing tonight? Go around the corner and I see the police on this side and somebody else on that side and they're shooting across the road at each other. Drove right through it. And I remember hearing three shots when we drove through. Everything went into slow motion. And I looked at, I felt myself, and I looked and said, saw no blood. And I asked a very strange question. Does anybody have a hole in them? And we looked around the kids, and nothing's wrong with anybody. And my wife and myself are okay. Kind of shaken up, we get to our apartment building, we park. I look at the vehicle, not a scratch. Not a scratch. And that vehicle sits high. It's a VW van. It sits high. And the police that was shooting across the road, I just had a glimpse of him. He was straddling the road. And he had his legs wide open and shooting straight. He was a short guy. He wasn't shooting under the van. He was shooting right at waist level. We get into the apartment. The phone is ringing. I answer the phone. It's my mother-in-law. And she says, how are you guys? So I relate to her what happened. He said, you know, you are the missionaries of the week. All the NEB churches were praying for you this day, this Sunday. And so we see how God really takes care of his own. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze, for I am the Lord your God. And verse 5 says, for us not to be afraid, for I'm with you. You are precious, you are honored, you are loved by me. And we felt this over the last 30 years. Move on to the next slide. When we started our ministry after 1 year of language school, that was for myself. My wife at the time had our first baby. Here we're in front of the place where we started our first ministry, a little wooden shack. And when we moved into this town of Tohis, which was a town of about 30,000 on the Atlantic Ocean, the first day we were there, we had gone out to eat supper after we had moved in, and while we were gone, our house was broken into, and all our valuables were taken. And the NEB churches here at home took up an offering to help us replace what was stolen. And we replaced everything. There were $7,000 left over. And at that time, what was happening, this building, in particular August, which July and August is our winter, it rained so much, the building was sagging. And there were termites in the overhead rafters. Now, there was one light bulb in the whole building. And I would have my Bible open under this 250-watt light bulb, and I would, every 20 minutes, have to shake out my Bible from the termite droppings that were dropping into the Bible. Imagine my hair. And so I asked the home office if I could use that $7,000 and replace the building. And they said yes. So one day I took two or three guys from the church, I put on my steel-toed work boots that I brought from Canada, and I kicked this building over in 20 minutes. I had never had so much fun. Next slide. This is what I built for $7,000. Seats 120 people. So out of adversity, God brings what he wants to bring into our lives. When you go through high water, when you go through fire, it's scary. There are times when we feel like we're not going to make it, but God takes us through. This is another instance of the same kind of thing. A parallel type of feeling. But God brings what he needs to into our lives. And he blessed this congregation. They're meeting in this building still today. They've built on, they've added on, and they're doing a great job. Next frame. Then we started our second term of service in a city called Novo Hamburgo. Translate that, New Hamburg. The cradle of German civilization in Brazil. They came across 200 years ago from southern Germany. Their dialect, I don't even know if you understand the name of it, is called Hunsrück. Have you ever heard of that? Yeah. Okay, good. Because I can understand them because it's so much Portuguese into it, I understand it. I learned the Hochdeutsch. And I get there and I hear this Hunsrück, and I'm going, wait a minute, I can understand a little bit of it. It's a type of Low German, isn't it? And so they speak that till this day. Till this day. So we're here in Novo Hamburgo, New Hamburg, and we're starting this new church, and you can see already at the side of this building, we've already added on Sunday school space. And then we built ourselves a new building, and Adam Maris was part of that construction. From this church. That was in 1991, 92. And then in 2003, we decided we're out of space. So next frame, I built this church in another location for 600 people. And this is already when we have started Chain of Love. And the church has been going for at least 10 years. We left now in December, this church building we've been in at least for 10 years. In December of this past year, Gerald and I have returned home. And in January, next frame, this happens. Next frame. This is the backside. Looking from the stage area. Micro downburst of air. 200 kilometers an hour wind. Just ripped everything apart. And the Chain of Love kids are asking, God, why did you allow this? And I can give a lot of answers that the kids may not understand. But just 2 weeks ago, we took up a benevolent offering in Edmonton. We had a benevolent concert to raise funds, and they raised $14,000 for this project. They themselves are doing projects in Brazil to be able to raise money to reconstruct this building as well. That is where all the Chain of Love house parents and children go and are nourished spiritually. Right now, a Lutheran church has opened their doors to them because they meet in the mornings, we meet in the evenings, and they've allowed us to be able to meet with them. But it's something you look at going, God, why does this happen? And so many people have decided to give offerings, relief offerings to help them out. And the NEB has allowed any churches to support this project till the end of October, to the end of April this year, to be able to have them rebuild. We built the first church with a lot of sacrifice. We borrowed money. There was really nothing that was given to us at the time, and we're able to build it. And I'm talking to them saying, be encouraged. You know, you're going through high water. You may feel like you're going through the fire right now, but you will pull together, and God will bless your ministry there. So that was in our second term of service, and this is what we carried it on to be. Next frame. And then we started Chain of Love. And this is a picture of the main gateway of Chain of Love. It's a whole city block and a half of land. I spent 10, 12 years building up the whole project with about 8 different men. And our purpose is to rescue, raise, and restore children. And many of you are involved as sponsors and have been over the years, and I thank you for that. I just want to run through that very quickly with you. Next frame. We rescue the children from the streets. The courts give us the children. And they come often unaccompanied by their siblings. And this boy happened to be left out, so to speak. He had fallen through the cracks. There were 5 brothers and sisters at our home already for about a year. And then they discovered they had another little brother. And this fellow came to the homes. And the day he came, we had a gateway team of short-term missions at our homes. And they decided to do a hot dog bash for the children. This particular boy ate 6 hot dogs the first day there. I'm sure he thought he died and went to heaven. So to rescue them from bad situations, that's what we do. Next frame, put them into homes and then raise them. This is a house parents of house number 6. They have their own children. They have their own little girl in front of the house mother. And the other 10 are children that we have that come on a rotating basis. As soon as they turn 18, we put them into our transition house where they learn life skills and to move on. They've already learned trades up to from age 16 on. And at age 18, we want to see them move on to semi-independence. And then we replace the opening that we have with the going out of that teenager or that young person with a new case that the cities give to us. And to raise them is elementary. You know, you have your own children. Feed, to clothe, to protect, to keep warm. It's something that's important, but there's more than that, just that. Next frame, and that's to restore them. Restore their self-confidence, restore their desire to live and to go forward. Restore what was lost at the fall way back when, to show them that God has called you, that God has first of all created and formed you, now he wants to redeem you. And then to move on to the calling that God has placed in their lives. This particular girl, Lisandra, came when we did have another group with us. And they were doing a hot dog bash as well. Don't ever give me hot dogs, please. I've been eating too many. And she enjoyed that. That was on a Friday night. On Sunday afternoon, before the service, at Chain of Love, the group decided to have an ice cream social for all the kids. And you know how kids eat ice cream. And this particular girl had a heaping bowl of it and came up to me and looked at me up in the eyes and said, "Oh, I adore you." And I'm going, "What do you mean by that?" She said, "Thank you for putting me into this place." But then, you know, the old rot, the badness begins to come out. She had been raised to steal. It's almost like an Oliver Twist story. And if she did not bring back a certain quota of stolen money or purses or whatever, she would be beaten by the lady that had taken her under her wing. Social services got a hold of this and saw how bad it was, and she came to us. Well, this girl continued to steal in the home, at school, in our offices. And every time she took something, it was for no particular purpose. She just desire to take it. And every time we caught her, and she would go through a cycle saying, I don't want to stay here anymore. I want to go away. I'm too embarrassed to stay. And we're going, we don't expect you to be perfect, but we're going to help restore you. And we conquered her and won her over every time we went through a cycle like this with her. And at one particular point, she said, you know, I hear voices telling me to steal. And we told her, we're praying that you would overcome this. And then one particular time she had stolen, and we confronted her about it, and she fell into, she was demon possessed. She fell. And she had voices coming out of her. So what do? You expel the demons. We did that. And then at that point she accepted Christ. And she's a transformed girl today. And she loves to sing. My wife would do all these different cantatas at Christmas time and at Easter, and she'd be one of the main singers because she just loves to open her throat wide and express her love to God. She's still young. We don't know which direction she'll be taking in life, but we see that the principal restoration has taken place that will help her through life and into the future. They go through high water. They go through fire. And to see that in little kids fighting with that, it tears me apart. People, that children that I consider family, it hurts so much. But it's part of the process to see them restored, restored to God. And then I want to move on to in the future, move on to the next frame. This is one of our girls that is now on her own. She's married. This is her wedding. Her first memories were of a mother who had a dozen kids in a shack, dirt yard, and she was one of the children playing out in the front. She remembers a VW bug pulling up and a couple getting out, and the mother saying, take any of the children that you wish. She was chosen. She was taken by this couple and abused sexually a lot. It came to the day where she was taken away, put into our homes, and then she had to go to court to denounce what this man had done to her, and my wife was with her. And it was the hardest day of this girl's life, and my wife as well, for her to sit there and say, this is what this man did to me. And then to see this girl to overcome this and to move forward and to have a guy interested in her, a Christian fellow, and then to get married. I walked many of the girls down the aisles. Others of them, I am the pastor doing the ceremony. In this case, I was one of the couples that stood up. We don't have grooms and bridesmaids in Brazil. We have couples that will stand up for the couple that's getting married to be their mentors afterwards in life. And we were one of those couples, and that's why we took this picture. A few months back, while we're here in Canada already, the former house mother of this gal dies. She had a stroke and died. And she wrote to my wife saying, how does God allow my mother that is so evil to be full of health and alive, and the one who took me in and nurtured me and loved me to die? So my wife was writing to her saying, you know, your house mother's in heaven. She's resting. She's got eternal peace. The destination of your mother, unless she finds the Lord, is not going to be anything like that. And to console her and to bring her forward in life, saying, focus on your family, on your husband, focus on your work, focus on your church, on your development. Move ahead. You be now an influence in the lives of others. We have many other cases like that. Next slide. Another boy who got married, who saw his father put an axe through his mother's head. And to get to the point where he was able to overcome and to marry. Next frame. Another boy who got married in their homes, who actually was walking down the aisle, not performed the ceremony in our gym at Chain of Love. On one hand, he had his house mother. On the other hand, he had his biological mother, who had just gotten out of jail for drug trafficking, who was totally destroyed by meth. Addiction to methane. how do you say meth, the full name? I can't even say it. But addiction to meth. And he said, you know, I want to thank my biological mother for bringing me into life. And I want to thank my chain of love mother for giving me the direction I needed and the nurture to know God. They were married in December, 2 years ago. A month later, his biological mother dies from overdose. Never knew the Lord. But at least we rescued him and brought him into a direction in life that he knew the Lord. And he is a chef, a gastronomical chef. His wife is a photographer. They're doing great. About a year and a half ago, I started mentoring a Brazilian to take my place. Next frame, please. This is Telmo and his wife at the far end. We're surrounded by the couple. This is the week before we left Brazil. He took over my job as director of Chain of Love. He does a great job. As a Brazilian, he can say to the Brazilians, we need to rally around. This is our work. Do we need to depend upon foreigners all our life to be able to do what we need to be doing? He and I together have been able to help kickstart another 12 organizations like Chain of Love to serve as a model to the churches and to the conventions in southern Brazil. And so pray for him. Pray for Chain of Love. It's ongoing. If you're a sponsor, continue sponsoring. If you want to sponsor, I have forms on the table outside here. The program doesn't change. Sponsors are always welcome. Next frame. I handed the church over to a Brazilian, Gerson Garros, and his wife, Denise. He did his Master of Divinity at Sioux Falls, our seminary in Sioux Falls, and he just did his Doctorate of Chaplaincy there as well with an internship in Milwaukee. And he wanted to stay in the U.S., except he wasn't granted his green card. He went back to Brazil. We were looking for a pastor to take over my spot because I was mentoring the Brazilian to take over my spot at Chain of Love, but the church had no one at the time, and we were looking. And then my son-in-law here in Edmonton said, Gerson is back in Brazil. So I phoned him up, and he came out, and we sat down as a search committee with him, and things happened. He became the pastor of the church. Next frame. And then November 15th of last year, 30 years to the day that I arrived in Brazil, we had a farewell. It was a time capsule for us from people from all different walks of life and from all different eras of our ministry there that had come to be together. There was at least 600 people in that building that was destroyed 3 months later. And here I'm passing on the baton, so to speak. I'm passing on the reins of leadership to these two men, to the two different ministries, and asking the church to support them. And so, come back home. Came home in April of last year for 6 months, and then went back to Brazil for two, and then we came back again. And in October of last year, I'm waiting for the Lord to give me a direction in ministry. I was always had a word from the Lord as to what to do next. A time of transition that was so clear and so evident, and all of a sudden, I didn't hear a thing. And I'm going, okay, Lord, I know you're preparing something for me, but I have to be patient. We left in April. This is in October. Ken Priebes, that some of you may know, used to be a missionary of the NEB in Cameroon. He phones me up and he says, I'm here in Edmonton. I want to sit down and meet with you. So we got together and sat down, and he said, listen, I want you to come work with Power to Change under the ministry called GAIN. And I said, what is GAIN? I know Power to Change was Campus Crusade. You're with the Jesus film, right? He said, yes. I said, that's all I know. It's way bigger than that. And he says, I want you to work with GAIN. And he said, I asked him, what's that? He said, Global Aid Network. Working with the Jesus film to establish churches, and once they're established, to be able to work into the community, different needs that they have with the church so that the church makes a bigger impact on society. And he said, one of the areas that we want help with is with our group homes and our orphanages around the world. We want you. And I'm going, okay, let me see if God's going to confirm that. The very next day, A distant cousin of my wife comes up to us and says, you know what, you should go work with Gain. I said, you know, yesterday I didn't even know what it meant. I do today. Thank you for your word. The day after that, someone else that I know in Edmonton came up to me and said, you know what, you'd be good at Gain. I'm going, okay, Lord, are you saying something? The very next day, someone else, you know the story, came up to me and said, you should work with Gain. Then in January, I went to their head office in Langley, B.C., sat down with them and met with them. Felt the Lord's leading in that area. The next day, we were in one of our churches in Chilliwack. At the end of the service, one of the businessmen came up to me and says, I want to take you guys out for lunch. So he took us out for lunch and he said, you know, I've been to their works and they need you there. And if you go with them, I will pay half your salary. I'm going, wow. Is that a God moment or isn't it, you know? It is. And all these moments come together to say, God's lead me into that area. I have envelopes on the back table. I have Chain of Love presented there, and I would like the church to continue supporting them if you can. And then Power to Change Ministries, I have an envelope there. I'm trying to raise my own funds to be able to go into international ministries of the same kind I was doing when I was locally involved in Brazil. If any of you would like to be involved in supporting me, it could be $5 a month, whatever it may be. Nickel and dimes add up. And just to be able to say, you know, God, I'm depending upon you and depending upon your people to put me into this ministry, into this place of service. I don't know what God has in store for me. I know just like you, you know, you go through high water, you go through fire. But God preserves you. And something good always comes out of it as well. But I will never forget from day to day what he has written in verse 4 of Isaiah 43. You're precious and honored in my sight. I love you. Don't forget that. That is God's stance. That's what he says when he's looking at you. And he's wanting to use you. Workmanship prepared ahead of time, created in the Lord Jesus Christ to do good works. He prepared that ahead of time for you and for me. Let's be active in his kingdom. God bless you.